Welcome to Outside the Lines, the podcast of our host, Bob Chevriard, and co-host, Scott Channon. Bob and Scott are longtime teaching pros in Westchester County, New York. They have both been ranked in the top 15 nationally in men's 35 and 40 and over singles and doubles. Bob is also the author of Deconstructing Tennis, the 4D System. Their goal is to help players gain a more in-depth understanding of many aspects of tennis, which are often inadequately addressed during the course of their development. Bob and Scott would love to hear from you on topics for future podcasts.
Hi, all. Welcome. It's Bob Chevriard here, your host of Outside the Lines, and I'm here with my co-host, Scott Channon. And today's subject, to fit well with our last podcast, is how to finish a match. Last time, if you recall, we spoke about how to start a match. Before we get into it, though, I'd just like to review how to start a match. It consisted of two basic points. One was to come out very solid, but not full speed, like three-quarter speed with serves and returns. Get into the game. Don't give away a lot of silly points. And with that, one thing that I really believe in is don't come out pushing in your endeavor to be consistent. Get in the right gear right away, because you're investing in the future of the match, which has many games yet to come. Scott, just say hi, please.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, we're going to have a fun time with this podcast today, because I think everybody values the importance of when you're getting close to the end of a match, how to behave and what to think about. And another thing, just to add to Bob's how to start a match, don't forget to try to get to your venue early and get a good warm-up and try to get on a court and do some playing before you actually go out to play the match, because then you can execute what Bob was talking about hitting the ground running to start the match. So here we go.
Okay, so there were a few of my regular listeners who said, Bob, that last podcast, you were all over the place with Woodrow Wilson and everything. And I promise I have just two more things to say about Woodrow Wilson before we get into it. First, after he graduated Princeton, he went and he taught at Wesleyan for 2 years, 1888 through 1890. And he played lawn tennis virtually every day. So he was a tennis player. Secondly, there was a thing that made him, he was by far the most popular professor on the campus at Princeton, which he subsequently went to teach at. And the reason he was the most popular professor is he followed the format that every good podcast should follow. A good podcast should tell you what we're going to tell you. We should then tell you, and then we should tell you what we've told you. All of his lectures were broken into those three components. So people really enjoyed going to listen to him, because he was really, in his lectures, he was maybe the first podcaster in history. So, okay, enough on him. And here's where we're going to go today, with how to finish a match. The first thing to notice or define is, what does it mean to be near the finish of a match? And Scott and I had a short discussion, and we agreed when you're within 8 points of the finish line, that defines when you're within the finishing portions of the match. So let's say you're up a set and 4-2, that would be the finish of a match, or you're down a set and 4-2, doesn't always mean you're in the lead. That would also be the finish of a match. And we also wanted to say that there are different reactions that we have depending upon the score. So if you're in the lead, you can be in either a large lead or a small lead. And if you're trailing, it can be narrowly or it can be significantly large once we get within this last 8 points of the match format. So let's talk first about you're in the lead and it's large, Scott. Is there any way that you would talk to yourself in those moments?
Yes. I would make sure to keep myself grounded and not start thinking about whether I'm going to win this match or that I could win this match, that I was on the verge of winning. So I would be very careful about what it is that I let go through my mind. In fact, sometimes when I have a lead like that, I will try to almost hypnotize myself and act like I am down by that score instead of being up by that score. I'm sure many of you have experienced being in a lead and getting near the end of the match, or at least what you think is the end of the match. And all of a sudden your mind starts to go to the future and you are not now playing the same kind of tennis that got you there. Granted, the other player may be doing some different things, but you really need to keep yourself in there and not getting distracted by what you think is, oh, now I think I'm going to win this match. So I try to do things to keep myself in the present, sometimes playing like a little more aggressively just to kind of counteract the tendency to let down when a team or a player has a lead. So those are my thoughts in terms of how to keep yourself together as you have the chance to finish the player off, because you have a good lead doesn't mean you're going to definitely do it. Bob?
Yeah, Scott, that's all very informative. I used to do a thing where I like to use the fact that I had created a large lead for myself. I'd like to use that as an opportunity to run a few plays that I had been doing successfully in practice, but hadn't used too much in match. So for example, for some of you, it might be a play that's rather infrequent these days, a serve and volley, and maybe it'd been working some in practice and you're getting to closing time here. You might want to try one or two out without changing your entire game plan, because what that's going to do for you is build some confidence for the next round where maybe you will have to serve and volley to defeat your opponent. So use that large lead as a way to be a little more creative and aggressive on the court. What about when you have a small lead, Scott?
So if you're getting to the possibility of ending the match, let's say you've won the first set 6-4 and it's 4-all in the second set, whether you're serving or receiving, the way to think about it is now these are crucial points within crucial games, because there is a very, very high payoff if you can execute some more aggressive tactics, because I think that's what's necessary when you're playing a good player, and assuming that player is pretty strong because they're playing you very close, you should definitely step it up and show that you are not going to be, taking your foot off the gas pedal and letting that player possibly get back into the match or, you know, win that second set because you just didn't play, you know, with tremendous purpose at 4-all. And the same goes for 5-4. And those games are so important in terms of your mindset, because you have to keep yourself calm, keep yourself focused, and make sure that you are staying to the game plan that you know has been working in that match. and just, you know, enjoy yourself. You're in the position that you want to be in. There's no real good reason to get nervous. I always use the expression, you can't stand the prosperity. Well, that should never happen. You should say, this is exactly where I want to be. I'm having a great time, but I'm going to play with my head screwed on right. So those are some of the thoughts that I think can help people in that tight situation.
So what Scott hinted at there was, or is, one of the key differences between the start of a match and the finish of a match. At the start of a match, you probably don't have a very good idea, unless you've played the player before, exactly what to expect. You've made some assessment in the warm-up, but pretty much you're going in saying, I want to play my game and see how this opponent reacts. By the finish of the match, you've played 90 or 100 points if the match is fairly close against this player. So you should have an exceedingly good idea of what's been working and what's not. And now is the time, when it's time to shut the door, that you make sure that you're really running the plays you want to run and putting them, your opponents, into uncomfortable positions that you've discovered through the course of the match that they don't like. So often, making this type of choice of what type of point you want to play as you're about to shut the door is the real key to being successful at finishing and not changing your winning game. So our next situation, Scott, is when we're approaching the end of a match, but now we're trailing. Let's say we lost the first set and we're down 4-2 in the second set. Is there anything you'd be doing a little differently there?
Well, yes, I think that you have to completely take all the stops out and be creative, and you have to make large changes in what you're doing in the points. You have to not only give yourself something to focus on and new tasks, because you're creating a strategy there, and you should change a losing game and never change a winning game, but in that you're choosing, you're playing a losing game, making those changes is really very important. I was playing a match in Spain once in doubles against two top ranked in the world players, and we lost the first set 6-love. And I said to my partner, because it was like we weren't even existing on the court there, I said, this is ridiculous. We're not playing tennis. We're playing something in our minds, because these two guys, one is ranked 6th in the world and the other guy won Wimbledon 2 years ago. We're playing some kind of other game. Let's play tennis and let's play hard. And in the second set, we played a really good set, and we only lost by one break. We lost 6-4. So if we had gone into the match with a better mindset and one similar to that one after losing 6-love, I think we would have had a lot more fun and better results. And you never know when you're going to pull one of those matches out, even against some of the top ranked players in the world.
Well said. So one thing, Scott, that I like to do if I was trailing in a match very closely is pay very careful attention to my opponent and to see if there were any cracks, because there are numerous players who, as they approach the finish line, nerves start to take a hold of them and they don't quite play the same. So you might see, for example, a ball hit to a certain spot and they're coming to the net, but it's not, the approach shot doesn't quite have the sting that it did earlier in the match when they were doing that successfully. Or you might see an unforced error or two coming from a particular shot that had been almost spotless until this player got near the finish line. You're looking for this tiny chink in the armor to see if you can then start to impose yourself, knowing that your opponent is not approaching the finish with complete confidence the way they had started off the match. If, however, I'm not noticing any of that happening. I'm prepared at that point to say, I've got to take, as Scott was saying, more risk. And I have to go for more, because if I just continue playing the same, even if it's pretty good, I'm going to shake hands as a loser. Now, in our pre-podcast discussion, Scott brought up, I think, an interesting distinction, and I was careful introducing this last section when I said, when you are trailing in a match, as opposed to I am losing a match. Can you tell us a little bit more about trailing versus losing, Scott?
Absolutely. I think it's very important how you interpret these situations so that you have a mindset that is positive and supporting you in terms of playing to win. If you're in a match and you get behind, let's say you're behind 4-1 in the first set, someone says, hey, what's the score? People very often respond, I'm losing 4-1 in the first set. And that sounds to me like you're basically in a losing mentality, because you're behind. Even though you're behind by a fair amount, you are not losing anything. You don't lose anything until the set is over and then the match is over. And again, the same way is that if you're ahead, you're not winning anything until later. So your involvement has to be mentally that you're playing to win and you're playing in the match, not that you are winning or losing and then having to go against that psychology, or, you know, use that. It's great if you're winning all the time, because then you can feel good, but it's not often the case. It's not always the case. So that's those are my thoughts on that.
So I don't think the final case where you're losing by a large amount happened to Scott or I. I mean, trailing, exactly. Trailing by a large amount happened to us very often, but we had a good buddy who made a few miraculous comebacks against very high level, satellite level players, where they lost the first set and were down really big in the second and came back to win. And I can tell you that his approach when he was found himself this far behind in the score was, he said, I'm completely changing my game. And it worked. I'm not saying it's always going to work, but if you're really getting hammered, please don't keep playing the same, because only one thing's going to happen. You're trying your best, but you're going to end up shaking hands as a loser. Okay. But so it's worth it. And one thing that people often think of, it's not always that you have to be more aggressive in this situation. Sometimes taking the air out of the ball when everything else hasn't worked, can be a very effective way to make the opponent have to generate their own pace and think a little bit more about what's going on the court. So in summary, Scott, I would say, if you're winning, we are going to stick with the winning game plan, and we have a lot of information at that point in the match when we're about to finish. If we're ahead, yes. If we're ahead. Very good. You got to catch me. You got to keep on top of me. I mean, I already have a wife, so I don't know what I'm going to do now. So if you were ahead, and if you happen to be losing, don't go down without a fight where you're attempting to change up the game a little bit and see if your opponent can weather the storm of either a tactical change or a slowdown of the game or something like that. Now, one thing in reality, in terms of USTA players, especially here in the East, is we're in the winter season now and there are many timed matches. So playing a timed match adds a whole other dimension. Let me first say, I can't stand timed matches. I think that tennis, one of the great things about it is the clock does not run out. You can't just take a knee. But in fact, in timed matches, if you win the first set and it was a long one, you can basically just take a knee and get to at least a tie, if that's what your goal is, by stalling and going to the bathroom and sitting down on the changeovers and all those unsavory things that people could do. So I only wanted to mention those time matches because anything we just told you now, we don't really, it does not apply to a time match per se because of that time element. And, but I can say, I think I speak for both of us, Scott, we don't want to see any gamesmanship in terms of running out the clock. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that goes without saying. And I think that players have to remember that they are in the match and at any point can change the momentum and end up winning the match, even though they were behind by a lot. So comebacks are something that you can create. And just, you never should forget that and never give up on playing with your intelligence and playing to win and always believing in yourself. Whether it's a tight match or not such a tight match, you have to keep that focus and then you can relax it when you're done.
Thank you all for joining us. There has been something quite relevant to all sports fans going on, the World Cup. So I'm going to make my prediction for Sunday's final, France 2, Argentina 1. Scott?
Reverse that. Argentina 2, France 1.
Thank you all for joining us. Hope to see you again soon.